Well, people, what is happening? You're listening to Josh Talks. My name is Joshua McClellan, and this episode is an absolute cracker. I had a lot of fun recording this. There was a good wee bit of time difference. I think when I recorded this, it was George's nighttime in my morning, I'm pretty sure. So in this episode, we talk about so much. We talk about his career as a fighter. We talk about the transition to coach. We talk about him moving over to Thailand and working at Tiger Muay Thai. He became the head MMA coach at Tiger Muay Thai, and he did a great job. You know, he has trained so many great fighters. He's ran so many classes. He's been involved with some absolute legends in the game. He's friends with so many people in the UFC and outside of it. And, you know, some of the people that he knows is, for example, he is friends with Volkanovski. Volkanovski trained at Tiger Muay Thai around the same time. His brother Frank is currently over in the Volkanovski camp, where he's working on Volkanovski's wrestling. We then talk about Peter Yan. We talk about John Hutchinson's relationship. We talk about Shevchenko. We talk about Tai Tuivasa. We talk about Mark Hunt. We talk about so many great fighters. He tells me so many stories from inside the world of MMA, and it was an absolute cracker, and it was a pleasure to hear his story. Next week on the podcast, we have Chris. Chris is a guitar maker from Northern Ireland. He's from Ballyclare. During this podcast, we talk a wee bit about our faith. We talk about making guitars, and we talk about his business really taking off. For example, one of the people that he's making a guitar for now is Lewis Capaldi, who I'm sure every single one of you have heard of him. So make sure you tune in next week for the podcast. And then after that, we have the Spartan on, and we talk about his career. We talk about all the things that he's doing in his life. He talks about issues that MMA fighters face. We talk about salary. We talk about the UFC. We talk about one. We talk about him calling out Eddie Alvarez. We talk about so much. So I think I've talked enough. So let's jump into the podcast, and I hope you all enjoy. Make sure you leave me some feedback. Go on the Apple Podcasts and review. Make sure it's 5 stars. It helps the podcast grow. Make sure you follow me on TikTok, on Instagram, on Facebook, at Josh Talks. And that's helped this podcast grow. Welcome to Josh Talks. Hello, George. How are you?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So how's the form? How are you keeping?
Good, you know, just navigating, I guess, through our current society of COVID, of closures and not closures and traveling and this and that. But all in all, well, I'm good, mate. I'm good. Yeah, just enjoying downtime with the family right now. My wife is getting ready to travel to the States with my daughter to see my parents for a month, and I'm staying back. So I guess just enjoying like family time before they're gone for a month.
Oh, fantastic. How have you found traveling and stuff during COVID?
It's definitely not ideal. You know, normally like before, when I was coaching at Tiger, like pre-COVID times, I would travel quite a bit. Normally at least once a month to another country, if not more. And, you know, before it was nice because I could go, you know, whether it be the US or, you know, a European country or Asian country or wherever it would be, and sometimes new countries. But since COVID has come on, you know, I think I've left Thailand 4 times. And I've done 4 quarantines, which are not ideal. So normally, you know, it's like you're gone for, you know, 8-9 days and then come back and see your family and everything's, you know, normal. But with COVID, it was, you know, travel for 8 or 9 days and then get back to Bangkok and be in a hotel for 2 weeks for quarantine. So, yeah, not ideal, not ideal.
Was there any requirements on having the vaccine and stuff for traveling, or has it all been?
Well, now in Phuket, they have a thing called the Phuket Sandbox, which is you can come to Phuket from, you know, most countries that are not considered in the, I guess, like a red country, as Thailand would put it. And if you're fully vaccinated and have had the vaccine for at least 15 days, I think you have to stay in your room for, I don't know, 6 hours or something like that, 8 hours once you arrive. And then once you get your first COVID test results back and you're negative, you can go around the island kind of as you please. And so that's what my wife will do. Hopefully nothing changes with that, because the government here changes quite often. But yeah, so I got the last time that I traveled to the States in May when I had a Loma Lipbunmi fight on a UFC fight night. I got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine while I was back in the States, because that was the, you know, the I was only there for like actually less than a week. So it was the only one that I could really fit in that time frame. So I did get that, which I think will kind of help travel in the future. But yeah, as far as like if you do the quarantine in Bangkok, then you just have to, you know, you have to rough it out and stay in the hotel, whether you have the vaccine or not.
Okay. So would you follow football at all?
I do not follow football that closely.
Well, reason why I'm asking is, so over here in Northern Ireland, we have a massive event coming up, which is like the European Super Cup. So it's like the winners winners of the Champions League versus the winners of the Europa League. And it's the first time in Northern Ireland's history that this has happened. So Chelsea's playing Villarreal, but in order to get into the ground, you have to show that you've had both vaccines to get in. And then if you don't have the vaccine, you have to show a negative COVID test.
Interesting.
So I think that's the way they're doing it. I think it's more because there's people traveling, obviously, from all over the world.
Right. So that's right. Yeah, that's one event. I think that's, you know, I feel like in our society, you know, there's, you know, some people pro-vaccine, some people not. And I think that it's like in New York, I saw they're trying to implement, and I don't know if this has already happened, where to get into a restaurant, you have to have a vaccine and whatnot. It's a strange time in the world. That is for sure.
How have you found going to UFC events and there being no fans? Has that been a strange experience?
Yeah, it's definitely strange. You know, like, even as a coach, I really enjoy the, you know, like, just the atmosphere. You know, I know as a competitor, I would not, you know, if I was still fighting or, you know, when I was wrestling in college, I always enjoyed and thrived more when there was a bigger crowd. And I think a lot of fighters are like that as well. But I also, on the same token, I think that a lot of fighters are probably enjoy not having the crowd. They don't have to deal with, you know, maybe their nerves are a bit better. But for me personally, I can't wait until the next event when there are, you know, fans at an event, because the last one I was, you know, it was just a fight night that Loma was fighting on. So there were no fans.
And how do you find, like, do you think it was easier for her, like, for you to give instructions and stuff with no fans, like, no, like, outside noise, or?
Yes, there's really not any fans. I'm sorry, there was not a lot of noise. You know, there were, like, some people, I think, at the event for Loma's, but not that many. Just kind of like a closed-door, invite-only kind of thing. And I think I've seen, like, on the last fight night, because I didn't really notice it when I was there. But it definitely, yeah, man, it definitely having fans, I think, is it just makes the experience and the atmosphere. And like, even as a coach, you know, like, I know, like, there's been times where I've been cornering someone, like, you know, and there's been a lot of fans in attendance, and I have to, like, I don't yell too much. I speak loudly and kind of like try to be precise when I corner fighters. And, there's been times where I've had to like maybe yell a bit more, or like the crowd's like really like going crazy, and I've had to like yell maybe to be able to hopefully get my, you know, the fighter that I'm with to be able to hear me. But, you know, in these events, it's just like loud talking, and you don't really have to like, you don't have to scream too much.
Yeah, I was talking to John about this on the podcast, and I was saying, like, from a fan's perspective, like when you're watching it on TV, when, like, say, for example, like a Conor McGregor card or any card like that, where there's a whole lot of fans, there's a whole lot of noise, It sort of drowns out the sound of any shots. It drowns out the sounds of the corner talking. You can't really hear that. But now when you take away the fans, it gives you a completely different perspective because you can hear how, like, say, for example, there's a leg kick. You hear the snap of that. You hear how loud it is. And it gives you a new appreciation of what the fighters are actually going through.
For sure, for sure. Last year, I can't remember, it was August or September, I had some people fighting on a ONE Championship event, and it was their first event back. And, after COVID, it kind of like taken the world by storm. And there was a Thai fight, and I could hear, like, I was probably 60 meters away from the ring, and there were no fans there, of course. And I could hear the, both fighters like making sounds, like as they were like fighting, like, a lot of times in Muay Thai, Thais will make sounds like when they're training and clinching and stuff. But I could hear the guy just like, and he was like making sounds. And then like, you could hear every time they would kick or elbow. I mean, it was ridiculous.
How did you find it actually training with the Thais over there? Because obviously they're world renowned for their sparring, where it's quite light. In some of their sparring sessions, where it's more tough. Like, I talked to John about that, and then because they're fighting so often.
Yeah, I think that it's I think that's like what a lot of people think, but I also have seen a lot of gyms that do have hard sparring and stuff like that. But I think there's like a time and a place for it. But yes, they do. But they spar a lot also as well. Yeah. And they clinch a lot. And even when they're clinching, they will not elbow each other, but like they will elbow with like with their forearm, and not actually their elbow, but with like the part of like basically where your joint, like where it makes a V, they'll hit like that. And which I think is good because it practices, but you're not hurting your opponent or cutting them as well. But yeah, I mean, I've seen some sessions where, Thai boxers have, they are sparring quite hard. But yeah, a lot of times they don't spar as hard, especially if they're sparring with foreigners. I think just technically they're so much, most of them are more advanced in Muay Thai than foreigners. And I think that they don't put as much, I think it's just a cultural thing. Like, there's not as much emphasis on winning and losing as there is in the West.
Yeah, of course. Would you say that there's a big transition in Thailand between Muay Thai transitioning over to MMA?
You mean for actual Thais that are transitioning? I've myself and kind of my team, my brother and Alex Shield, the one of the former BJJ coaches at Tiger. We train a lot of Thais, and that's like something that we're very passionate about, and we want to continue to try to help build Thai MMA. So we've had quite a few that we've trained, and I think the biggest thing is obviously like you have to teach them about the ground. And, but I think, the ones that we've trained have picked up the ground game, better than what some people would think, I think, because, clinching in Muay Thai, like in real Muay Thai here in Thailand is, a big part of fights and scoring. And I think that, it has a lot of similarities to, not only the ground game, but also to wrestling. So it's getting them to understand, when they are clinching or they are in close quarters that, obviously they can be double legged and that's not a foul. So you have to get them used to that, but also, the stance in which they stand in Muay Thai compared to MMA, and just because they're a good, a good Muay Thai fighter or a good boxer or a good karate guy doesn't mean that you're going to be a good striker in MMA, because it's very different when you mix takedowns in and things like that. The stance is different. It's just a completely different sport, there's definitely a lot of things that they have to change or adjust. But I think it's, I think MMA is a great sport for Thais to transition to from Muay Thai, and I think specific styles of Muay Thai also make good MMA fighters, compared to maybe other ones.
So what I would love to talk to you about is your journey. So obviously you were a three-time state wrestling champion. You were a four-time national finalist. How did you start wrestling? Was it something that was always in your family or?
Yeah, well, I wasn't a national finalist. But yeah, my dad wrestled, I think, 2 years in high school and 2 years in college. And he got me into it when I was about five. And it took my brother, I think he was probably six or seven, because he started at the same age, but he spent more time like running in the bleachers and in the rafters of the gymnasium than he did actually like training. But yeah, we both started young, and my dad was, I look back, you know, now that I'm in my 30s and I look back on it, and, you know, I'm thankful for the, you know, all the sacrifices that he made for us. And, you know, he took us to tournaments and, you know, would get up in the morning and run with us. He always pushed us, but he was never like like what we would call in the States, like a psycho dad, or a, you know, like a sports dad, or like baseball dad that, like, you know, would get mad and like beat us. Or like, my dad never, ever, ever got angry at us if we lost. You know, he always filmed our matches and would go over the, you know, the mistakes that we made, and really went out of his way to help us succeed and do well in the sport. And, you know, looking back now, I'm very thankful, because I had a lot of friends who's, you know, had parents that were really rough on them if they would lose and stuff like that. And they never, you know, they ended up kind of like fizzling out. And yeah, in hindsight, you know, all that time that my dad put into us, you know, we stayed wrestling through high school and college. We went to, my brother and I both had scholarships, you know, to go to college and wrestle. And in a way, that's what has brought us out to Thailand and, you know, and into our current careers that we're in, is because of wrestling. You know, one, for me, when I was done wrestling in college, I knew, you know, about a year before I was done and graduated, that I wanted to start training in MMA and start fighting. And yeah, the rest is history. And that's, you know, that's how I got my brother out here after I had been here 3 years or so. I got him to come out and be the wrestling coach when we were at Tiger. And yeah, it's been quite an interesting journey, that's for sure.
So in high school and stuff, when you were wrestling, would you have got like a big crowd at the meets and stuff, or?
Yeah, I mean, where we're from in North Carolina, wrestling is not really like considered a big sport. I think wrestling, you know, in the States and worldwide has gained, I think, you know, more notoriety through MMA. But, you know, if there were, you know, 200-300 people there, that would be considered a big crowd. And in college, if there was a couple thousand people there, you know, that would be considered a big crowd, because both in college or university and high school, the schools that I went to were not like the, you know, like world renowned for wrestling. I went to, you know, a good high school in North Carolina that was, you know, known as a powerhouse in wrestling, and in college as well. But I wasn't at like a Penn State University where that's like, you know, one of their biggest sports. But yeah, it was, there were usually like good crowds. Yes, to answer your question.
Was there a big transition from high school to college? Was there a big massive step up that you could see even in the training, or was it pretty much very similar?
I would say yes. There's definitely, for most high school athletes, when they transition to wrestling in college, there is a big difference. I mean, you know, you're going from like, a lot of times being like the man in high school to the low man on the totem pole once you get to college. And you know, you're going from being like a 17, 18 year old kid to, you know, wrestling 22 year old men. So there, it's definitely a big difference in competition and whatnot, and the way that practices are ran, and it becomes more like a job almost, especially if you're on scholarship and stuff. But it's, yeah, I mean, those were, you know, looking back on it, some of the best years of my life. And yeah, it's just, wrestling in college, man, it's, you know, juggling like school and, you know, your academics and social life and wrestling on top of that is, it teaches you a lot, you know, And I think that wrestling is like, it's very cliche to say, but it's definitely, I think, you know, in my experience, the toughest thing that I've ever had to do with, you know, making weight. Like in fighting, you make weight, you know, 3-4 times a year for a fight. Whereas in wrestling, you're making weight, you know, from October until March, until after the national tournament, you're making weight usually at least once a week, if not twice a week. So, and you're going to school on top of that. So it definitely teaches you a lot about yourself and teaches you a lot about working hard and things like that.
So just for the people listening, what was your walk around weight then? And then what were you cutting to?
I would say that I wrestled. So for my senior year, I wrestled, it wasn't too much. I wrestled 149 pounds. And I came into like preseason probably at 163 pounds. And then I would walk around, you know, after our preseason workouts were done, I was probably like 159, 158 walking around. Like normally I had to lose like 10 pounds, but that's like, again, you're doing that like once a week, if not twice a week.
Mm-hmm. So what ways were you cutting weight? Obviously here in the United Kingdom, like unless you're actively involved and fighting or boxing, you know, there's not really many sports over here where you would be cutting weight. So what were you doing today?
Normally, I mean, you watch what you eat, but you know, like you'll compete on a Saturday in a wrestling tournament or in a dual meet. And then, you know, I usually like eat all kinds of stuff on Saturday night and Sunday. And on Monday, again, I was back dieting and, yeah, I mean, it's not like wrestling when you cut weight is not ideally, like I've learned how to do it through MMA a lot safer and a lot better. But there's definitely like more dehydrating yourself and keeping your weight, like trying to keep it lower for longer than it is in MMA. It's definitely, I think cutting weight in MMA is a lot easier on your body than it is in wrestling. But normally practice, and then after practice, you know, sit on the aerodyne for another 30 minutes. And then depending on what day it is during the week and, you know, how far off on your weight you were, but a lot of extra runs and things like that.
So when you were done with college and you started going to MMA gyms, did you know exactly what gym that you were going to go to? Did you have that all mapped out, or was it just sort of try a couple and see what you liked?
Yeah, it was kind of like, I knew that. So my brother's high school coach opened a gym in our hometown at the beach a year before, like right before my senior year started. And my brother was going to be attending the same university. So I started like, and if you're on scholarship in college for wrestling, most of the time, like you're there pretty much 11 months out of the year training, like you're expected to be there training. And so after like our summer camps finished and I had like a 3-week break where I went home to North Carolina before having to go back to school, I just did some cross training. So it wasn't because you're wrestling all the time. So I did like some BJJ and Muay Thai stuff. And I actually went and saw like one of the first sanctioned events in 2009 in my hometown. And I saw this kid that I had wrestled with his brother in high school. I was like, man, this kid won. I can do this. And like, I knew right then I wanted to fight. So when I was done with the national tournament my senior year, I went to Penn State, to State College. They had a gym there that Dominic Cruz, I had seen that he had went to, cause I used to watch him in the WEC. And I don't even remember what the gym was called. It was something Lion. And, I went there a couple times cause it was about 45 minutes from where I went to school. So I went there a couple times and trained. And then as soon as I moved home to North Carolina, I knew what gym I was going to train at. It was just like, you know, the one my brother's coach had opened. And I stayed there for about probably 6 months and I had two amateur fights. And then I started looking for other gyms. So I went to Atlanta. I was had a friend that was possibly going to move there for a job. So I went with him and I checked out a few gyms and and I went down there and I ended up moving down there and I was in Atlanta for probably 5-6 years before I moved to Thailand. And that's like right away I found some really good gyms. I trained with Manu Into, who was my striking coach, and still I call him coach, you know, today. We're still very good friends. but he fought in Thailand back in the 90s. And he was one of the few foreigners that was like quite good. So I trained with him and I trained at American Top Team and I trained at another gym called The Cooler that Brian Stan, who used to fight in the UFC, is kind of like was a mentor to me and a coach. So I trained at his gym as well. But there's a lot of like Atlanta, Georgia has had like a lot of good UFC fighters. Douglas Lima, the Bellator champions from there. And there's been a lot of good guys, you know, Rafael Assansal, like over the years that I've trained with in Atlanta. And that's kind of where I was until I ended up in Thailand. I would say most of my fighting was done there until I moved to Thailand.
I was talking to John about his like his transition over to Thailand. And, his was sort of like where he just turned up to Thailand for a couple of weeks of training, just started holding pads for a couple of guys and sort of transitioned from there. Like he had, I don't think he was expecting the coach.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the same thing. You know, I came for the 2014 tryouts at Tiger Muay Thai and I didn't come. I can't, you know, like, honestly, I moved to Thailand thinking, all right, I'm going to stay for at least a year. And I think I came with like $4,000. I didn't know how I was going to stay for a year, but I just knew that that was like my plan. But then honestly, within the first month, I knew I was like, man, I don't want to leave this place. And I think a lot of, you know, foreigners that come here, that happens to them. But yeah, you know, I didn't expect to, you know, to work there. And I'd say probably like, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 months after I was training there at Tiger and the tryouts were over and stuff, and I was on the team that I started coaching wrestling and became the assistant MMA coach. And then, you know, just over time, I was, you know, eventually became the head MMA coach.
When you got that role as head MMA coach, did you sort of see an end to yourself like professionally fighting?
No, at first I didn't. You know, I had, I want to say 3 or 4 fights while I was still coaching, but my last fight that I had was I think in 2016 and I won the fight and I didn't even plan on, you know, like I didn't go into that fight being like, you know, this is going to be it for me. I had kind of re-injured my knee a little bit, like not a bad injury. I had before I had surgery on my left knee on my MCL and I just kind of tweaked it in the fight. So I was kind of taking some time off and just, you know, kind of focusing on coaching. And you know, a few of the guys talked to me and, you know, wanted me to do a bit more. And yeah, that's how it kind of happened. And then I just started thinking about it and, I knew that I loved Thailand and I didn't want to leave. And I really enjoyed coaching. And yeah, I just kind of like, you know, I was like, you know what? I know like I'm on the path. I'm doing what I want to do. You know, my goal has always been to make it to the UFC, but yeah, I just kind of had this feeling like, you know what? Like, I think I'm okay at this coaching thing and I can get better at it. And I really enjoy it as much as I do as fighting. And I just didn't want to mess up the opportunity that I had as, you know, being a coach. Cause it's hard to do both of them. You know, MMA is kind of a selfish sport at times and you have to do what's best for you as a fighter. And I knew that one of them was going to give, whether it was going to be, you know, my training and my fighting was going to, you know, was going to suffer or, you know, the team and my coaching was going to suffer. So, I chose to just kind of stick with the coaching. Like at first, it took me a while to like kind of come out and physically and, you know, actually verbally say it. But yeah, once I started doing that, I was just like, yeah, so I was okay with it. You know, I don't have like, I honestly don't have any regrets. And, you know, of course, I still think sometimes like I could, you know, if I'm sparring with guys or, you know, training people and, you know, I feel like I still, you know, could do it, but I have no desire, you know, will to, because I know what it takes to, you know, to train and to, you know, compete at a high level. And I have no desire to ever do that again. And I haven't had that desire, you know, for many years. So, you know, I don't have any regrets about it. And it just kind of naturally happened that I just kind of moved into that role.
What do you think it is about Thailand that gets people who, like you said, are foreign to stay. So you've had like you and your brother, you have John, you have Sean, Woody, you have a whole lot of boys here who are over at Tiger Muay Thai and left. And what do you think it is that, that keeps people there?
Ah, man, it's like, I say this a lot, like, especially where Tiger is located at, like this, that road in the, it's not like real life for, you know, like a lot of people come there and they want to like give up like a good job and stuff like that. Like it's just the climate and the, like, especially on Soi Thai Ed where Tiger is located, there's, you know, a lot of other gyms. There's a lot of people that come and like, when you come to Thailand, you're paying like, you would never pay the same amount of money to train at a gym back in your home Western country. Like you just wouldn't do it. But here, because it's like a destination place that people come for training, you know, not only MMA and BJJ and obviously Muay Thai, but people come and do CrossFit and they do like, there's places you can come and do like cleanses. And it's just like a, like Thailand's like this like mystical place that's like, you know, cheap. Well, it's not really that cheap anymore. Like if you, it's definitely, you know, become more expensive over time, but it's just, it's a beautiful place. Honestly, man, the people are nice. You know, there's, yeah, it's just a beautiful place. You're driving around on a motorbike and if that's what makes you not want to leave, the sun's always shining and it's beautiful weather and it's hot and the beaches are beautiful and, you know, it's exotic. And it's a combination of things. At least it was for me. But yeah, that's, people just come here and they fall in love with it.
So you're no longer the head coach at Tiger Muay Thai. What are you doing with yourself now?
Yeah. So I resigned back in late May, I guess, kind of. I would say in May or early June is when I went in and spoke to, you know, my former boss. I have no, you know, it was nothing that Tiger did or, you know, anything like that. It just, for myself, I was ready to move on and I'm going to be opening a gym with, a few other of, you know, team that my team, my brother and Alex Shield, who was, one of the former BJJ coaches there. And, Woody, who's one of my former strength coaches as well. It was under kind of kept quiet for a long time, but we're in the process of doing that. And it's not quite finished yet in due time. But I'm very appreciative. Like, you know, when I spoke to my former boss at Tiger and I was given a great opportunity, you know, as a young coach. And I'm very thankful for the opportunity that I was given. And I gave a lot to Tiger of myself and I got a lot, you know, I'm very thankful for the position that I was put in and, you know, entrusted in as being the head coach. And it just, you know, it came to a point where it's, you know, it's time for me to do my own thing now. And that was always like, once I started coaching, it was always my goal to be able to, you know, open a gym with my, you know, my close friends and my brother. And that time is, you know, it's finally come and I'm very excited and it's, you know, it's a bit scary going into the unknown and stuff, but it's very, very exciting. And I'm very excited for the, you know, for the future of having our own gym and, you know, being able to, you know, implement our own culture and beliefs and what we believe in. And yeah, I have nothing but respect for everyone at Tiger and I'm still friends with, you know, a lot of people from there and a lot of the fighters and Tiger will always, you know, it'll always be Tiger Muay Thai. It'll always be one of the biggest gyms in the world. You know, that's never going to change. But yeah, it was time for me to move on. And I got to a point where I felt kind of like stagnant and I thought it was that time for me to move on. So yeah, I'm very excited about the future.
So is this gym just going to be for pro fighters or is it going to be open to everybody?
Our gym will be, you know, training fighters is I think what we're all passionate about the most. But no, this gym will be for everybody. It'll be for fighters, for your normal fitness enthusiasts and, you know, the person coming in to train BJJ for the first time or do CrossFit or some type of conditioning or Muay Thai. So we're very excited. It'll be,
in the near future, there'll be, you know, more things released that people can check out about it. But no, obviously, you know, we'll train normal people, you know, people trying to lose weight, people trying to get fit, people who are, you know, trying MMA out for the first time, or BJJ or wrestling, Muay Thai. But yes, training fighters is, I think, what I'm, you know, most passionate about, and training, you know, Thais amongst that, you know, helping like the local Thai community, and really, you know, trying to build more fighters up that are, you know, that are from Thailand, that are Thai nationals. And there's also a lot of expats that live here in Phuket, and there's a lot of like half Thai kids that live here as well. So, yeah, I think that for me, obviously, you know, I'll train foreigners that come here and, you know, want to learn, and that's, I love that. You know, I love coaching. I'm very lucky to be able to, you know, to, my job is something that I actually truly love to do. You know, I used to sell cars before I came here, and I was fighting and juggling a job selling cars, you know, to be able to support myself, which was all good and well. You know, it was good money and I enjoyed it, but like, I wasn't passionate about it. And training fighters and coaching people and helping people is what I'm really passionate about, especially again, trying to help, you know, the local Thai nationals, because the sport is changing here as well. It's becoming more popular and more people are getting into, you know, BJJ, into wrestling, and there's famous musicians and actors and things here that are, you know, that are Thais that are getting into it, and it's becoming more popular. So it's something that I want to really, you know, help do. And even I was, you know, before the head coach at Tiger, ultimately it wasn't my, you know, my team or my gym. But now, you know, I can do things exactly how I want them to be done. So I'm very excited about that.
It's a big, massive difference from the buzz of selling cars to the buzz of making the walk.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. For sure.
So have you got the facility and all that? Have you got the facility all set up, or are you still in sort of the process of getting things done?
Yeah, so we have the facility and it's partially set up. It's being, as we speak, being done. So, yeah, hopefully in the near future, we'll be able to release a lot more information about it.
Unreal. And obviously during your time at Tiger, I think it was 3 world champions in the UFC.
Yeah. Who would be, name them for me?
So Jan Shevchenko and Volkanovski.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, this is another thing that a lot of people, you know, don't realize. Like, yeah, I was the head coach at Tiger, and I've quartered Peter Jan before, but I tell people this all the time. Like, John is his, you know, his head coach. John's the boxing coach at Tiger. I have a very good relationship with John. He's a good friend. I have a lot of respect for him. And he's Peter Jan's head coach. Yes. Like, I, you know, my brother helped Peter. I've helped Peter. I've, you know, cornered him for a fight before. Valentina is, you know, she trains out of Tiger, and I think people associate her with them as well. You know, I helped her and her sister occasionally when they would do our classes. And Volkanovski, actually, you know, my brother is his wrestling coach, and goes out and helps him. And I've helped Alex as well. But he, I would say, is more of a friend. You know, like, we came into Tiger at the same time in 2014. We both did the tryouts. Whenever I'm with him, if I, you know, anytime that I can help Alex, of course I'm going to help him. But yeah, that, I would never take credit, you know, to being, I guess you could say, any of those 3 people's coaches, because it's just not the reality of it. But yeah, that's, yeah, you know, in the last 5-6 years, Tiger's produced a lot of great fighters and gotten a lot of good fighters, you know, to big organizations. And a lot of fighters who weren't at Tiger before have come and they've entrusted in us and in the past. And, you know, my brother and I have helped with them with their camps and gone and cornered them. And yeah, it's had a lot of good years.
Have you ever seen the pictures of Volkanovski when he's back playing rugby?
When he's, oh yeah. I've seen all kinds of photos of Volkanovski.
He is a big guy, like from when he's back then rugby.
Yeah, he was a unit back then, man. He was a unit back then.
So did you watch the last fights with, obviously I know that you've trained as well with Tai Tuivasa. Did you watch his last fight?
Yes, of course. Of course.
Coming out to the Spice Girls.
Yeah, he's but that's just Tai, yeah. You know, that's a trip. I've got I remember times of us training together and just him always being Tai, man. What you see is what you get. Like how he is in the media is exactly how he is in person. He's a good Tai, man. He's a crack up. Like he's a damn good fighter. And I've had some really good, times with him and good memories with him. He's a really good dude. And seeing him win and get that win recently was awesome. And I can't wait to see him, in his next fight as well.
Yeah, he looked really good. And I think he was on, very last year, he was on like the Joe Rogan podcast. And he comes across as just a really good, really good guy.
Yeah, he is. Like I said, man, what you see is what you get. Like, he's always having a good Tai and lighthearted and funny as hell. You know, he's always cracking jokes. And he's a good dude, man. He's always been good to me. And, I've helped coach him before. I've trained him for fights. I've, gone with him and to corner him for fights. And he's a good dude.
How did the relationship with City Kickboxing happen?
Just because. So Kai Carr of France was at Tiger before me. Eventually I became one of his coaches and coached him. Brad Riddell was one of my good friends. He was the kickboxing coach at Tiger for a while before Rafael Faziev. And Eugene Behrman used to come out and he would, of course, always help Brad and Kai and stuff when he came out. And Dan Hooker was at Tiger for a bit. Eugene would bring Israel and some of the other boys out and, obviously we'd spend a lot of time together, all of us. And then eventually once my brother came to Thailand and was coaching at Tiger with me, I couldn't get away. And they asked him to, to come out one time to help Israel. And he kind of started helping Israel. And then it just like we all stayed in close contact anyways. And Brad had moved back home and was training there full time and Dan and Kai. So my brother just kind of started going out there, the first time was to help Israel. And then over time he started helping, some of the other boys and Brad and them. And so now he always goes for their, at least for their fight weeks to help them or help corner him. He's always with Volkanovski. He always corners him when he fights. It's become like, kind of like our extended family for sure. When Dan fought in January, I was there with Khalil Rountree and because of the situation in New Zealand with the visas and whatnot, to get back in the COVID visas, or I can't even remember what they call it. But they have to have, a specific document, basically like, it's like a drawing, a number that they have to get to be able to get back. You can't just come back whenever. So it worked out where none of Dan's coaches could come with him. So I cornered him for his fight on Fight Island last time. They asked me if I would, because I would be there. And of course I said, yeah, because again, they're, like in an extended family and Dan's a good friend of mine. It's great having that relationship with that gym and that group of men, because they're all, again, a lot of them are, former people that I coached or helped, or more than anything I'm just friends with all of them. And and Eugene Behrman, I have a lot of respect for him and the rest of his coaching staff. They're world-class coaches and professionals, and I feel very lucky to be able to to share knowledge with them and vice versa and learn from them as well. It's a great relationship that we have with that gym.
Just what you were saying about like Australia there, and I think it's probably the same all over the world. Like I would have a couple of friends over in Australia who would be out there fighting, and they can't come home because they're scared to come home, that they won't be able to get back into Australia.
Yeah, I think it's I think New Zealand and Australia, man, they're like, they're very, very strict with the COVID situation. And I think leaving Australia is hard. And I think getting back in is hard. And like in Thailand, the situation has gotten definitely worse. And as we're on our third wave of COVID here, Phuket, knock on wood, is not too bad. But it's definitely gotten worse. But, you know, you can still come and go as you need. You just have to do the quarantines and things like that. But I think the whole world is ready for this situation to improve.
Oh, you're 100% right. I would, over here in the UK, I work in the NHS. So I think at the minute we're preparing for the fourth wave, apparent fourth wave. That's what like all the bosses are saying. But hopefully it's all coming to an end, because we're starting to see over here, obviously football's massive and stadiums are starting to open up, and we're starting to have, right, you know, UFC cards coming over to the UK and stuff. So it seems like it's getting better.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. You know, having the shows that they're having in America now in the UFC and, you know, concerts and things like that. Like my parents, you know, I asked them recently, do they wear masks? They're both vaccinated. And they said, no, like, you know, you can if you want. But a lot of people where I'm from don't wear masks. So, yeah, it does. It definitely seems like it's getting better over there or in some Western countries. But the rest of the world needs to catch up, eh?
Yeah, we're actually over in the UK. It's everywhere you go, it's masks. We still haven't got past that yet. The only time you can take that mask off is if, you know, going into a restaurant, sitting at a table, going to the cinema. As soon as you're sort of away from everybody else, that's when the mask can come off.
Right.
So what I want to talk to you about as well is obviously the last fight with Petr Yan, which was against Aljo.
Yes.
What do you think about that? What do you think about the rematch coming up? How do you see it playing out?
I see it playing out the exact same way it did, other than with the end result. I think that, you know, I've had the pleasure of knowing Peter since I believe it was his first professional fight. I remember the first time Petr Yan came to Tiger Muay Thai and I trained with him. It's like, man, who is this kid? Like, he's very good, spoke no English or anything. And I've always had a joke with him, and I've said this before in interviews, like when he got signed to ACB or what is now ACA, I used to joke with him and say like, oh, you're going to be the ACB champion. And eventually he did become the ACB champion. And then I said, you know, like I used to joke with him and say, you're going to go to the UFC. And then it was, once he was there, I was like, you're going to be the UFC champion. And then it was nice to finally send that message to him when he did win the belt against Aldo. And, you know, just tell them congrats and stuff. But the thing that is like what Peter did to Sterling up until that point, I think it surprised a lot of people. I think a lot of people were counting him out and thought, oh, you know, Aljo would just take him down and submit him. But it's just like Volkanovski. I've, you know, had the pleasure and the privilege of, you know, not only being able to help them, but to be able to see them train and compete, you know, in training sessions for the, you know, last 7 years. And nothing that Peter did during that fight surprised me at all, as far as his performance up until what happened. And I think Aljo was shocked. And I think a lot of people, you know, in the world were shocked as well. But Petr Yan is like one of the most complete MMA fighters there are. Like, he can box. Obviously, he can punch, kick, he can Muay Thai, he can clinch. He, like, the thing about Peter is, like, I would see him doing things like clinching with, you know, some of the Thai trainers after training in MMA and stuff, like after the sessions were over, just to, you know, do extra work. But it's not like he was doing it for, you know, shits and giggles. Like, that stuff that against Faber, when he was clinching with him and then kicked him in the head and knocked him out, like, that stuff that I've seen him do, you know, in countless training sessions. And I've seen him wrestle with some very, very, very high level good wrestlers. And I've seen him compete in BJJ in the room, you know, training against other very high level grapplers. And nothing that Peter did surprised me. And I expect him to, you know, to dominate this, you know, the rematch.
You mentioned the Aldo fight, and what stands out to me, and that was his boxing was very, very good for that entire fight. He looked great. But I think it was the fourth round, John stuck up a clip of it, and it's John's talking to him, and he's just talking away, and he's saying, look over there, look over there. There's your family. Do it for your family. And you can see him look over. And it's a pretty nice moment when you can see him looking over and going, flip, this is what it's all about. And he goes out and stops Aldo in the next round.
Yeah. It's man, that again, that doesn't surprise me, knowing the type of man that Peter is. And you know, he does it for his family. He's a good father and a good husband, and he's an absolute machine. Like, that guy trains to the point where, you know, like, his coaches, you know, you have to tell him to like pull it back sometimes. And but he is a true professional. He's not only, you know, talent only gets you so far, and he's obviously very athletic and talented, but he works extremely hard. And if he's not good at something, you can bet your ass he's going to be doing whatever he can to improve in that area as well. So yeah, nothing with Peter Yan surprises me, man.
So we'll move on, and then we've got Volkanovski versus Ortega. And I'm pretty sure his record's 22-1, and his last loss came in 2013, which is, like, it's very, very impressive.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, again, just like Peter, the same exact thing. You know, I've trained with Volk and helped him for years, and more so as a training partner. But Alex is, I say this as a joke, but it's true. He's one of the nicest people that I've ever met in my entire life. And he's just a hell of a guy. And what you see is what you get. And I feel bad for him, because he's like, he just does not get the credit that, you know, he deserves. Like, his first fight against Holloway, like, you know, that was like a shutout to me. He's a tactician, and he's good. Again, like Peter, he's good wrestling. He's good on the ground. He's good at striking. And he's a professional in everything that he does, you know, the way that he lives his life. And yeah, I mean, obviously I expect him to win this fight. And I think that he's, you know, way more well-rounded. And Alex is just, he's a great guy, a great champion. And he's, again, he's always improving, and he's got a great team of coaches and training partners around him. And I mean, you saw the adjustments that he made the last time that he fought Max, you know, to have the adversity that he went up against in the first two rounds, to come back out in the last three rounds and to shut him down. And he's an incredible fighter, man.
One thing that I love about his Instagram page is his cooking.
Yeah, it's so funny, because he really loves cooking. Like, that guy loves, they all used to give me shit and say that I just, you know, I ate to survive. Because I'm not like the biggest eater, and I don't think my brother is either. But Alex, he genuinely loves food, and he loves to cook. So it's it's funny watching those cooking things that he does.
That's it. Calling it now after the UFC, you've got a cooking channel on the way.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Another fight that I'm excited about on that card, which is an incredible card. You think you've got Shevchenko on that card, and then you've got the return of Nick Diaz versus Lawler.
Uh-huh.
What do you think about that fight?
About Diaz?
Yeah, Diaz-Lawler. How do you see it playing out?
I don't know, to be honest, man. Like, I haven't really paid attention to Robbie Lawler, and obviously Diaz hasn't fought in years. But I said this to somebody before Diaz fought Leon. Like, when you fight him, it's just not a normal fight, you know? Like, you're fighting somebody with a lot of animosity towards you. And, you know, in this sport, everyone approaches it differently and how they, you know, game themselves up before the fight. But, like, I mean, you could be beating that guy to a pulp and he's still talking shit to you and, you know, telling you to come on. And it just mentally, like, you're going up against a lot more than just a normal fighter when you fight against a Diaz. I don't know, man. I have no idea who's going to win or, you know, but I'm sure Nick Diaz has been training, you know, the whole time that he's been off. I'm sure that he's been training and, you know, they do triathlons or whatever. And I'm sure he's going to be well in shape and he's been training. Like, you just don't go away for 5 years. And, you know, if you've been set, it's one thing if you've, you know, taken a long, long time of period of time off and then you come back. Like, if you're not, you know, if you're just going in there and training with like doing some BJJ and a bit of this and a bit of that, but if he's been training like with his brother and other high level fighters for that whole time, then man, he may be the same way as when he left. Who knows? But I definitely will tune in because it will be, I'm sure, a spectacle to watch.
Yeah, I'm sure. You mentioned the Leon fight there, and I thought Leon was doing incredible for the whole four and a half rounds, basically. And then he got the last 30 seconds of the fifth. Or was it the fifth? Yeah. And he got tagged. And then it sort of, from all the casual perspective, it was like Nate Diaz just won that fight.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's like, again, it can, like, you're just not going into a normal fight. You know, you're going in against somebody that has a lot of animosity and is, talking trash to you the whole time. And you have to be able to stay focused the whole entire time.
So I've got two questions left for you. And the next is, what do you think is next for Israel?
I think it's probably Rob is what Dana said, I believe. Correct?
I'm not too sure. I was looking at it before online there, and I couldn't exactly see if there was anything set in stone yet.
Yeah, I think I heard an interview of I think they said that. I think Eugene said that in an interview, and I'm pretty sure I heard Dana say that. I mean, who else do they have, you know, is deserving to fight him other than Rob?
I think it's a great fight. And again, from interviews and looking at interviews that Rob's done, he comes across as another guy who is an extremely good guy. Real nice fella.
Yeah. Israel's awesome guy, man. He's, again, what you see is what you get. He's a very nice guy.
So I'm going to finish up. What's been your favorite memory in this journey?
Favorite memory, man. I don't know. I don't think that I have just, you know, one favorite memory. I think that I'm very lucky to, you know, to be in the position that I am and have had the opportunities that I've had. But, you know, in my almost 8 years of living in Thailand, I've been blessed to, you know, to be around, to help and coach, and just be around some of the greatest athletes in the sport. And I'm just lucky to, you know, to be able to travel around the world and see new countries. And I have a lot of memories, man. I have a lot of great memories, you know, so far that I've been on this journey. And I feel very blessed, and I don't take it for granted. Just to be around great people, and build relationships with people around the world. Like, I've really, like, since I've moved to Thailand, you know, I've had the opportunity to really meet people and help people from around the world. And I feel, you know, there's been times where I remember one time I went to Czechoslovakia to corner an Australian fighter that I had. And the next day after the fight, I had a friend that's a Chechen kid that I used to train, Mago, and he picked me up in Czechoslovakia and drove me back to the airport in Austria where I was leaving from. But before he took me to his family's house and had dinner and took me around the city. And, it was just random that I was there. And, you know, he just messaged me and said, hey, I'll pick you up and take you to the airport. And I feel blessed to be able to, you know, through being in Thailand and being able to meet the people that I've met. I live a pretty incredible life. I have to say, like, I feel very blessed to be doing what I love to do.
Just to finish up on that, I had a guy called Rodney Moore on the podcast, and he's from Northern Ireland, and he would coach all the fighters basically from this park. And he was saying that every part of the world, he has a friend that he can stay with when he goes on holiday, just from fighting, you know.
Yeah, man. But it's so true. You know, I've met so many people, from around the world, and people that I consider, you know, close friends or very close acquaintances now that, I've, you know, through the opportunities that I've been given since coming, in this chapter of my life and coaching and stuff, I've met a lot of really, really great people. And I've been to a lot of really cool places. So I look forward to,
the future of that as well.
Well, sir, I'm wishing you all the best. It's been an absolute pleasure hearing your story, and hopefully we can do this again.
Thank you, mate. I appreciate it. It was a pleasure.
Cheers.